Hi there. Today I'm here with Clark Sell. As a developer, he's worked for Microsoft and other places, but he also ran his own software company. He also ran like a tech conference, which has been quite popular for 15 years. And Clark is a vocal advocate on community and holds the belief that technology should always serve human beings first. So I'm very excited to talk to you, Clark. How's it going?
It's going well, and I love the vocal advocate. I'm gonna have to add that to my bio somewhere.
Yeah, you're totally free to do so. Glad that you liked it. So I mentioned it briefly. You ran that conference, that conference, which is what most people know about you. So that was a conference that you ran out of Wisconsin and in Austin for 15 years. For those people who don't know you, who is Clark Sell and what does he do?
That seems to be sort of an ever-changing question at the moment. I would tell some that I'm historically a software enterprise software engineer. I grew up in the dot-com boom making websites on .NET, and that led me to Microsoft and spending a decade there doing consulting to advocacy to product work to sort of all over the board. From there, I went and worked for a company by the name of Telerik, which is a Bulgarian company, and it was in charge of some mobile stuff and some other products, but basically product management. From there, we spun off, had a company, software firm that we've been running now for 9 years called Unspecified. And for the past 15, I've run a conference called That Conference. And I think the thread through all of it is, a bit of radical candor, or as you said, a vocal advocate, but really, kind of community and people and enabling people to do what they do with computers. I've never, I can write the code and do the thing, but sort of, I think my sweet spot is really sort of leading people and making processes efficient. And reading kind of what's coming and how to create a safe place for everybody to sort of be the best that they can be in what they do. And, for many years that was that conference and other things like code camps and whatnot. And we're now reinventing ourselves as to what that means sort of going forward.
So, I mean, 15 years is like a hell lot of time. Have you been like in a workplace or on a project for a longer time in your career?
It's a good question. I spent 8 years at Allstate across two divisions. So on what you would know is the property and casualty, so like auto and home. And then I spent probably the other half of that in the finance side. And then at Microsoft, I was there for almost a decade, which would have been the longest, like, paycheck I've gotten somewhere. And that conference, which I, for those listening, I will inevitably also call TC for short, was certainly the longest continuous thing that I've done ever. So even when I was at Microsoft, I probably switched jobs every 2 to 3 years. So I was doing something a little bit different in a different part of the company, but TC, while TC changed over the years and was much different from the first year to the last year, certainly was the longest by many years.
Okay. I mean, you have been working as a developer and a consultant. So what did you make to start a conference? I mean, that's a cool idea, but it's quite unusual for someone working at like a regular tech place, right?
Yeah, I mean, It was, I started it out of a desire to connect the people in the Midwest with one another. So I was speaking a lot around the country. I was actively involved in communities sort of all over the place. And I was just pissed that the Midwest didn't get the love that it deserved. And around here, we have lots of major metros. We have Chicago, we have Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, Des Moines in Iowa. Like there's a lot of big metros where a lot of big shit is happening, but the Midwest values sort of are that of quiet, humble. So they don't really ever make the news. But yet, like, it's running the dialysis machine that grandma's on, or it's the factory that's making, you know, this or that. And so, like, big stuff. And I wanted to create a place where all of the metros could start to get together and learn from one another, because it wasn't like it was the dominant .NET, you know, ecosystem. There was .NET and Java and Ruby and or Rails. I mean, one and the same. And so, like, how do you get all of those folks together to, like, share ideas and share what's working and do that? And for me, that sort of manifested itself as a conference.
And so that's...
Yeah, I mean, it was just a... I saw it as a reunion of, you know, a celebration of the time we get to come together and network and share. But really, in between, you know, how do you do stuff throughout the year where you have the support, you know, which led to us creating a whole SaaS system and everything around kind of growing the community every day of the year, because the conference is just, you know, a few days of the whole thing. Like, what's the point of a community if you're not, you don't have a community just because you got together for 3 days? Then you have an event. And I'm not an event planner, right? Like, the event was just, I don't want to say an unfortunate accident of trying to create the community.
Like, more like a catalyst?
Yeah, like, you needed that to do the other. So that's what we ended up, you know, that took the disproportionately the amount of time that was, I had to do all the other things given time, money, resources. So, but, you know, in there is, you know, this love for connecting people. And I don't think I really realized that when the whole thing really started, but I do think that that's what separated us a little bit from what you see out there.
Yeah, that I mean, it was a great experience. I just want to talk about the early days of TC, of that conference. Like, you mentioned that you're not an event planner, and whoever has ever organized an event of any size probably can relate to that. It's a hell lot of work. And it might be even a bigger lot of work if it's so many people involved, right? So what was the first conference? What did it look like? You were like, okay, here's the venue. Do people even show up? I can literally see the sweat on your face. And like, how did it all work out? What did you do to make it happen?
You know, I think the best thing about a startup or your first time doing anything, whether that's a marathon or this or that conference, is you're just super naive. Like, you really have no clue what the fuck is in front of you. And so you have your vision of, like, what you're going to do and how you want to get it accomplished with zero baggage of the realities of things. And so I didn't understand how the hospitality space worked. I didn't understand how food and beverage worked. I didn't understand how sponsorships really worked. But I knew how I wanted them to work. And thus I told people that you're going to work in my framework. And that is good and bad, right? Like, we were able to change the way the venue worked. And for those who don't know anything about that conference, we held it at a convention center that was attached to a water park. And so we're not talking about like a little college. We're talking about 200,000 square feet of convention center space and a staff and everything that kind of goes around with what it takes to do that. And so things that we did different were things like we wanted to have an hog roast, and that was not a thing that people did. Like that didn't, that people couldn't compute to having a hog roast at a conference that had kids there. And the venue was like, I don't know, like you mean like we're going to have some pork? And I'm like, no, you're going to cook a fucking hog, the whole hog, and we're going to celebrate it and have it and do that. And, you know, those ideas seemed outlandish at the time, but for me, it was about how do you create a space where people can bond? And the bonding place was that over dinner. And a very Midwest thing to do is to have a hog roast. So, you know, I tell that story because the first year was thinking that we would have 1,000 people, that, you know, everything would be fine. And, you know, all we had to do is sort of do the work. And we did a lot of the work. But what you didn't see was we went into the event $20,000 upside down. We didn't hit our numbers. We were drastically misaligned on price versus cost. The systems that we had in place were good yet not good, right? For like the volume of people that we would have had. We didn't understand, you know, what if you would think to today, we have things like what happens if a kid got lost or active shooter or how do you call security like on the quick? Like those are all things that you don't really think about when you go to a venue. But me as the organizer, like I have a radio to the, you know, the chief security or the police that says if an active shooter or somebody has a stroke or something that we can call them as quick as humanly possible. Right. Yeah. And not that we had any of those issues, but when you're dealing with a massive amount of people, right, you sort of have to cover all bases because we did have people who passed out or had an allergic reaction to something that they didn't know about or whatever, whatever, lost kid, right? Like you need to be able to react to that stuff fast. So a lot of being naive in the beginning, a lot of people had a lot of trust in me that we were doing something that was cool. Like I have the utmost gratitude for everybody who came to our first thing because the first thing had no brand or reputation, right? There was nothing. It was just people believing that I was doing something that was of value. And sure, we had speakers and all that, and you could go, well, it must be good because you had X person. Yeah, but those people also were trusting in me to create a platform for them to do a thing, right? So it's this stool of like sponsors, speakers, event organizer, and attendee. And all of those legs need to be balanced, right? Because if they're not, then the whole thing topples over and it doesn't work. And thankfully, you know, it did work. And then we went on to do our second, our third, and, you know, then our 16th or 17th.
So it's basically beginner's mind, why it worked out in the first place. And then you got the experience in being an event planner accidentally.
Yeah. I mean, it was the, after the first year, it became very clear that the thing that we needed to do was make sure we ran it as a business. Like when we came in, not that we didn't run it as a business the first year, but there's a big difference to like, oh, I got to sign a contract and there's like, hey, there's a name on it, to like, oh no. Like we need to manage the P&L and the expenses. And we need to understand like what our revenue targets are and how we're going to get there. And how much can we really spend? And what does it mean? Like we didn't have insurance and this, like this sort of completely exposed. And so luck, you know, for anybody in all things life, you know, plays into it. And at the other side, just, you know, every day trying to be 1% better than you were before, with sort of your eye on what is it that you're doing and your why. And we just, you know, if anybody who watched over those 17 years, like there was a lot of refactoring and adjusting and trying to just create the best product and community that we could for everybody who was involved. And we did stuff different than everybody, than a lot of people. We didn't have speaker dinners. We didn't have, you know, this or that, because this is what I believed and what I wanted. And thus, that's what that conference was.
So fast forward 15 years, unfortunately, there won't be any other that conference, right?
Yeah, I mean, in 2019, we had our biggest year. We had almost 1,800 people. We filled hundreds of thousands of square feet of convention center space. It was in the news. I was on TV. Like, it was a big deal. And then 2020 came and we had a global pandemic. And I think it's hard for people to understand what all happened in that space for the independent producer. I got hate mail every week.
What for?
Because we ran an event. I mean,
during the pandemic,
we didn't run one during 2020. We did online stuff every month, but eventually we went back. And for years, I got hate mail and threats about, you know, we're super spreaders and we're killing people and this and that and all kinds of other bullshit. We had the financial struggles that came as a result of the pandemic. You know, the inflationary costs, our costs doubled, which meant our ticket prices had to go up. It seems on one hand, it doesn't seem like all of these things are any one big deal in and of itself. But when you start to add them all up together, they like have this compounding effect. So we'll take gas prices, like the diesel price in the United States had double tripled. Well, that meant the cost for me to ship the semi down to Austin, Texas, went from being a few thousand dollars to $6,000, $7,000, $8,000.
Mm.
Well, that's a big increase, right? When you're like, where am I going to go find another $4,000 or $5,000 just to cover fuel, let alone labor costs and all that? Like that's just diesel. And, you know, those things sort of compounded over time. And, I found myself, we were playing this game of how much money do we have or can we invest into the company versus what's the curve of people going back to events. And the healthcare industry and tech are the two laggards in returning to those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sort of playing out time of, you know, if I dump another $20,000 into this or another $50,000 into this, will we get sort of over the hump of what we need for people to come back and start doing it? And so early after the pandemic, we were, we were losing money on the events. I was working multiple jobs, as I've always worked multiple jobs. We started to see things coming back, you know, but we went from, you know, 1,900 people in 2019 to 400. Mm-hmm. And then we lost, you know, sponsors because sponsors weren't coming back. And then there was another, you know, outbreak. And then there was a huge amount of tech layoffs. And so numbers were starting to come back, but inflation was going up. We got to a point where we were just upside down hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then the numbers started to come down again. And it was like, I'm out. I'm financially exposed in a way that I was uncomfortable that we would ever kind of get back out of it. And I couldn't, unless we decided to drastically change the format, meaning like wholly adopt AI or something, we would be becoming something else. And so my wife and I, she's also my business partner, we're presented with, we're $200,000+ upside down of our money.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. My other business has taken a huge hit because I've disproportionately spent all my time on that conference, and now we don't have any money coming in. And the numbers don't seem to reflect a trajectory that we're comfortable with of, say, we're going to invest another $100,000 to see if it's going to pay off. And when I say pay off, I mean just break even. Like, this isn't like, oh, well, Clark didn't get paid. No, Clark was never getting paid. Clark was investing hundreds of thousands of dollars into the event. And we were going deeper and deeper in the hole. And at some point you have to say,
that's it.
I just can't do it anymore. And in all of that came with me having it creating health issues and stress issues and a lot of other stuff. So it's not like, you know, it's not like it was just one thing. You're like, oh, look, I'm overweight and I've now been in the ER because of AFib and I'm upside down hundreds of thousands of dollars and I've got to fire people and we're working out, you know, contracts with anything in that, at the level of which we're doing, you're signing contracts that are like multi-year contracts. So you're negotiating that you think in the years to come, you'll have, you know, plus 100 people or 200 people, and you're on the hook for those hotel rooms or food or whatnot. So I have to make a decision. Like, do I think that that conference is going to grow by 20% so I can fulfill my contractual needs back to the venue? And what most don't realize is the event organizer is sort of the person in the middle that's getting pulled in all directions and doesn't really have a lot of power. And, you know, if people don't buy tickets, if sponsors don't sponsor, you're sort of in this no win of all of it. And so we had to just say, look, we gotta stop.
So you started like 15 years ago, somehow made it work with a beginner's mindset and figuring it all out along the way. And then the whole thing like just like peaked around 2019 and 2020. The pandemic hit and we are left with all kinds of different uncertainties in the world since then, which feels like being in a place that we never been before, at least in most recent history. So maybe it's a little bit more than just about the diesel price, right? I know it contributes to the costs and stuff, but like there must be a reason why you went from 2,000 to 400 people. That I'm trying to get the change in the industry and the change in the community went from flourishing in 2019 all the way down. And that, at least in my experience, is not something that is exclusively to that conference. I see no meetups in my region. I don't see that many conferences. So what happened in these 15 years in the industry?
So we, a mindset for one, we went from a place where we valued hackathons and getting together to learn faster. We valued sort of that human connection and what sort of happens in tech to, you saw social media, especially in tech, but during the pandemic, create things like content creators in tech. And I'm not saying that there weren't people who created content before, but the mindset changed from like everybody would write a blog to, now suddenly there's a popularity contest of who's the biggest on TikTok or this or that. And so there was a bit of a cultural change as to, I can get what I need only online, and sort of de-emphasizing the human connection, because we're pretending that that human connection is real online. And did our tools get better? And that, yes, all of that is true. But at the same token, tech decided, well, we can all work remote. And so everybody was like, yeehaw, I can finally work at home and I don't have to be around anybody. Now, let me preface this. I've been working at home since 2006 in this same fucking office that you see here. It's been painted 3 different times. I can tell you with a lot of experience that this is not an ideal working situation. Take it as one unit, right?
Yeah.
I think that there are times where you should work at home. Of course, this depends on the company and the whatnot, that you should work at home because you need deep work and you need to be distraction free, whatnot. Well, the home is also a place where there's lots of distractions. We have a house that we had built that has a purpose built office. This office is soundproofed. It is disconnected from the rest of the house, disconnected. It was designed to be an office. It has a whiteboard and a conference table and all kinds of stuff, a refrigerator. Like, it was purpose built to be an office. And I can tell you that the innovation and things that happen as a result of going into an office and being around people, that flywheel effect creates better morale, better ideas, movement, whatnot. Yes. Is it distracting? Yes, absolutely. Does it need to be a 40-hour a week thing? No, it doesn't. There's some place in the middle that the two need to happen. The problem is we swung the pendulum so much in so many different ways during the pandemic that the things that happened in the office, like, hey, what conference are you going to, or meetup, or this or that, stopped. That conversation stopped. Social media became fragmented. We became very opinionated upon who somebody was because they were on Twitter or Blue Sky or this or Mastodon or whatever. It doesn't fucking matter. People just sort of fragmented and went everywhere. So now the conversation can't even happen sort of unified in a place, because you're over here and I'm over there. I'm going to judge you because if you're on this platform or not. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It's just happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, then you have companies who are like, well, I'm not going to pay for you to go to a conference. So then the person's like, well, I'm not paying out of my pocket to go to a conference. And then the companies were like, well, I'm fully remote, so I don't need this office space. So then the people who are running meetups, mind you, was altruistic in the first place, who were leveraging those office spaces for free, now didn't have an office space for free, didn't have the time. They're trying to work and make their money. And thus they went away. Because now, where do you get space to run a meetup? Well, there's no fucking offices around anymore that people are letting you use. And now the rules have changed, because now they're like, well, you need to have maybe somebody on site, or it's got to be this. So that's harder. Mm-hmm. If you can get it, it's harder. But now the cost is more expensive, because now it's not like I'm buying a couple pizzas for $20. I got to buy pizzas. It's $200. Well, now I need a sponsor who can sponsor for $200. But now the sponsor's like, well, fuck that. I'm just going to use my Instagram influencer because their numbers are bigger. So why would I go to an in-person thing when you only have 20, when that guy's got 200? And it's like, yeah, but they're not the same. Like, yes, but people look at measurements and they look at these things and they say, well, look, that's more than this, so it must be better. And so you just ended up in this place where, again, much like us running the conference, where a lot of the little things added up to a big cost, you have a lot of like social, economic things that are leading people to not want to get together. And you're seeing it change a little bit now where people are like, oh, I really should get together. But in some cases, it's almost like it's a little too late. And there's going to need to be, you know, it'll come back and there'll need to be a new sort of like tribe of things and people that sort of pull things together. And there's a lot of efforts, of which I'm still involved with, just at a not very public perspective, of trying to get leaders, to get people together, to do these things and create these places and find space for meetups and these things to happen so that people can, we can continue to, grow the community. And I think, in tech, I think one of the most amazing things that we have is community. And I think it's great that you and I, you're in Germany and I'm in the United States and we have a relationship and we know one another, but our relationship wouldn't be anywhere near as strong as if we hadn't met in person multiple times. Like, it's just, it's just a fact. And so we have to value that. And the people have to value that. And people have to tell their stories of the things that happen as a result of them going together, because we have to train a segment of people who, if you go back to maybe 2018, let's say Baz started in his career in 2018, was just sort of getting his feet underneath of him, decided maybe he was going to go to something in 2019, but definitely going to go in 2020. Because now Baz is like, I understand, I got to get involved. But then 2020 comes and then there's nothing and then there's no more. And then 2020 becomes 21, 22, 23. And now people are starting, because really it was like late 22, really 23 when conferences started coming back. Well, not really. So sort of, but then there was a whole mass exodus of, layoffs and this and that, whatnot. So now we're at 25. Well, Baz has been trying to work now for 7 years.
Mm.
Like, Baz isn't a junior. Like, a huge swath of time has passed that would have been very influential on Baz to be surrounded by mid-level, senior level, whatnot. And it's gone. Yeah. And they have zero perspective on what community is other than what's happened online, which is just an instantiation of something, but they're not one and the same. And yet people have made it that they're one and the same, and they're not.
So basically, like, as an event organizer, or it doesn't matter if it's a conference or a meetup, you have basically like two sources of income. One is from the people attending the conference. They are usually are paid for by their companies. And the other one, of course, is sponsorships. So if I got it right, you're saying that sponsors didn't sponsor anymore because they could find what they seem to have better alternatives on social media with influencers and all this stuff. And that people are not paying because their company is not paying anymore.
But why sponsors, I mean, so sponsors, it was a lot of budgets got pulled. So all these things dovetail off one another. So if a sponsor, and you were at our last event, we would typically have 35 sponsors in Wisconsin, which would do, anywhere between $300,000 and $500,000 that would offset the cost of the tickets and the things.
Mm-hmm.
So they would come for product sales, branding, or recruiting. Okay, let's just take the recruiting aspect. If I'm recruiting, the fastest, easiest way to go find an A player or a B player is somebody at a conference. They've already shown that they're going to do extracurricular things. They've already put themselves out there. Like, if I'm going to hire somebody, I'm going to a fucking conference. I can cut through all of the bullshit. I get to meet you face to face. I get to see how you work. I get to see if you're going to be a good cultural fit. Like, I can cover so much ground so much quicker if I just went to a conference. But herein lies the problem. 350,000 people were laid off in 2023 in tech. And so now that same recruiter's inbox is full of resumes. And they say, well, I don't need to spend $10,000 to go to that conference to just get resumes. I got 6,000 in my inbox that I can't get through. And my argument would be, that's great. Well, why don't you just come here to the 600 and pick out the 5 you need and you could be done by Monday? Like, I understand that you've got 6,000 in your inbox. It doesn't mean you need to read them. Like, you're not getting through them. But what they did is they lost funding from the C-suite saying, we don't need to spend money on that because we already got more than what we need. So why would I? Now, at the same token, they're all trying to watch their profits and margins and all this. So everything pulled back. And they also said, well, I'm not sending anybody to a conference because I need my margins to go up. Look, everything's really expensive right now. And I got to do this. And, you know, we had to lay off people. So if we laid off people, the optics wouldn't be good if I was then going to send my people to a conference because I just laid everybody off. And I gave them the excuse that money's tight when, on one hand, money is expensive because interest rates and all that. On the other hand, they're just also trying for corporate margins and whatnot. And so all these things sort of collide with one another. Like, I can't have the optics because I'm afraid of morale issues. I need to watch my margins, so we're not going to invest in your people anymore. So we're going to take what was a $2,000 or $2,500 or $3,000 educational budget, and we're going to say, well, it's really only $800. But at the same token, my costs have now gone up. So instead of it being a $500 conference, it's a $1,000 conference. And they go, well, fuck that. That's gotten way too expensive. Why would we go for that? That must be a money grab. Clark's just trying to grab the money like everybody else. And it's like, well, no, the plate of food is $75 now when it used to be $30. So all these things like collide with one another. And then the person who's coming may or not be, and this is sort of a stereotypical thing in tech. It's like most tech folks don't pay for tech folk things. Like, their companies pay for it. Yeah, so sure. When their companies are paying for it, they're like, well, I'm not fucking paying for it. And they're not giving me any vacation or time, or they're not giving me any time off. And I'm certainly not using my vacation because I only get so much vacation. So I'm not going. Well, then what suffers, right? Again, all of those pieces of the stool, when they don't line up, well, we were holding the stool up by investing more and more money to the point where our leg broke, and then it crumbles.
So all of that sounds like the outlook on the tech industry as a whole has become quite pessimistic, right? We had the pandemic, then mass layoffs, inflation, all of that stuff. Back and forth between working remotely and working from the office, companies not really knowing what they want. A lot of people in a hell lot of uncertainty. And now, I mean, there is another uncertainty coming to all of us, which is AI, of course. I mean, a lot of people yep. think they are going to be replaced. Other things, they might just get better product managers. But again, like in retrospect, all of that sounds like a pretty dark place to be right now, being in tech. And you just finishing the last conference, what is your personal take on that? Is it, are we all now in survival mode, or is there something, some light at the end of the tunnel?
I actually think that this is probably the best time to be in tech. Now, I'm going to preface that with, I have been through the dot-com boom. I have been through the mobile boom. I've been through the SaaS boom. And now I would argue we're in the AI boom. And it's ugly right now. And that's good. But a gold rush is coming. And I say that because the amount of things that need to get done are going to exponentially increase. So everybody's like, AI is going to replace my job. No. Much like when you wrote a website, it didn't replaced the marketing team and the sales team and all that. We created new work, and we're creating new work now. And arguably, a lot of the work that it can replace is work that I never wanted to pay for anyways. So let's just take a simplistic state. Do I want Baz working for me to create yet another login box or another fucking component that has a text box in? No, I don't want that. I don't want to pay for that. I don't even want to write that. I'm tired of writing that stuff. What we need is Baz to use Baz's big brain and come up with more creative solutions and instruct the computers to do the things that we needed to do so that we can actually get to the backlog of stuff that we need, and we can adjust our product based upon how our customers use it, and we can create a workplace that moves fast and tests better, because we all know how well our stuff is tested. Not at all. Right? How can we start to work at a capacity that we have, right? How can we get to the place where you're not working overtime? I mean, I've been around the block for a while. Working 120 hour a week was not unheard of. I'm not saying anybody should do that, but I am saying that those were expectations that were placed on us. Is that better today? Sure. Do we all have an endless backlog of shit that needs to get done? Yeah. Are there executives who are going a little bit over the edge and like, I can replace all my engineers and vibe code my way to the future? Yeah. Are they going to fail? Yeah. So let them. Like, new stuff is going to come as a result of this. Much like when we were in a dot-com boom, we thought, oh my God, like, we were just making websites, and now we have this interconnected web of APIs and SaaS products, and mobile things that do this. And, you know, people are measuring to the millisecond of what, it, you know, influences, you know, button clicks of revenue and this and that and the other. Like, the amount of work that is being created and is to be done is infinite. And AI is not any magical thing. It just helps us in some ways automate chores that we wish we've always been able to do anyways. And so, work is going to change. Your role as a developer will change. Your role as a business owner is going to change. Like, every role is impacted. And that is creating an opportunity to refactor how we do work. It's also creating a new way for software engineers to be integrated at all levels of business, because now maybe it's a little bit more affordable to have you, Baz, work at the little shop because they only need one and they don't need an engineering team of 50. Mm-hmm. So right now you have this like unsettling set of marbles that we're all walking on that are sort of getting aligned so that work finds itself to all of the right things of what it's going to be. And that's going to take a little while to sort of span out. But I think the things that are ahead of us are probably the most exciting that they've ever been.
So, and
frameworks will adapt faster. Stupid development tasks that we don't want to fucking do, somebody will, you know, go like, here's a new testing thing, so I don't have to worry about testing it. Everybody's gonna be like, great, sign me up for 12 of those, right? Like, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had better security frameworks that we could just use at our cost to go, hey, my shit's more secure. Like, that's great. Like, sign me up for 12. I'll take them.
I mean, it's interesting.
Things are coming.
Those companies that put a lot of effort in testing frameworks and good documentation and I don't know what, logging and tracing and all of that stuff, now are actually benefiting from that because they could all put all of that into the context of an LLM, which then eventually would produce better results. But anyway, is it like you're if you had one advice for someone working in tech, would it be like get an AI as soon as possible, or is there more to it right now?
I think it depends where you are in tech. So, like if you're a tester or a designer or a developer, I do think there's sort of a common thread, which is you need to learn and you need to learn and recognize that what you're learning may be thrown away, but also it will set a foundation to understand the things that are coming, you know, that will continue to come and be built on, and you'll have better context because you'll know why these things have changed. And I would have a very open mind and understanding that how we work is the thing to understand, to invest the most energy into. Like, what does it mean to have a set of agents that work on your behalf? What does it mean to train an LLM to do this sort of work? Because you, the individual, are being given resources. And by that, I mean data, I mean compute that you can use at your disposal to work better and faster. So that unlocks a lot of things depending upon where you're at. So let's say you wanted to make test case data. Well, we don't have to write a program that uses Faker to generate this type of stuff. I could go into ChatGPT and go generate me a JSON, you know, thing of 100,000 records that meets this, you know, deviation of names and addresses and whatever. And 12 seconds later, I've got 100,000 records of data that I can use. Well, that's pretty fucking powerful.
Absolutely. I think the main difference, like to anything else that we've seen so far, is as a developer, it's hard to get your finger on that stuff, right? Because like if it's mobile, go ahead and learn Objective C. If it's like cloud or distributed computing, here are 12 gazillion of AWS services. Go learn all of them. Here's your certification. Thank you. But now you have a chatbot or a chat box, right? There's only one input of text. It's hard to imagine how to start learning all of that.
I think, and therein lies the thing, which is right, it's hard. So do it. Like, there's not, you're going to have to become good at learning this thing that is changing because that's how it's changing. And you can either kind of succumb to the fact that it's like, oh, I don't get to just read the manual of the one thing and get good at JavaScript, or recognize the fact that you, as the human, are getting paid to solve business problems and do those business-like things, right? And part of your skill is that you understand how to make programs to do that and thus do it. Like, learn how to live in this new world because it's not changing.
Yeah. So basically you are saying it's not like the hard skills, like learning React or learning AWS or learning whatever. It's more like adapting your mindset to how the new world will operate.
Yeah. I mean, and those, if you have those hard skills too, you're only exponentially better, right? Like, I can use Claude Code and jump into VS Code and tell it to go do some stuff. And because I know JavaScript, I know when to call bullshit on it. And I know how to use it with sort of surgical precision. Whereas somebody else would go, I don't understand. It worked on my machine. And you're like, but it's not maintainable. Like, those skills are not useless. They're just as important, but you become exponentially more important when you can marry all those things together at a speed that we've never seen in the past. And I think that's why that's what makes where we're at right now in this sort of inflection point of the tooling and the compute and all of that. If you can marry those together, you've become bigger than yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You get to go to a company and go, yeah, I can do this stuff because of, if you want to kind of rewind, it was like, well, how good are you on Mac OS or Windows? They're like, oh, you know Windows. So you fit in because we all use Windows. So thus you can move a little bit faster. And now we're saying, hey, you, how do you work? And you're like, oh, I got 329 agents that do testing while I'm doing this. And I swim backwards and all these things do the great things. It's a drastically different working environment than what we're used to. And we're all figuring it out. Like, there's no right answer at the moment.
So we are still, at the beginner's mind.
Totally.
Yeah, love it. So from what I understand is you personally applied that somehow. Like, you help business owners utilize AI. So how does it look like for you, like in your daily work with clients?
Yeah, we have a few clients now that we're working one-on-one with, and we're getting ready to launch a program, sort of like a boot camp, for lack of better words, that you can, you, the practitioner in your business or the founder, or sort of depends, like we're sort of aiming at the kind of entrepreneur, founder, small business. Your context of your problems are different than the context of my problems. So what we're doing is creating this like 4-week boot camp where you can come with a group of people and we can evaluate the business and how you work and start to strategize as to how could you do it different, more efficient with different tools or new tools or the tools you have, and incorporating things like AI. Now there's a lot of AI tools that are just in another product. So, you know, it's silly to say like, oh, I want AI to write my email. Well, I could go, well, just get Superhuman. Like, that could be the simplest solution for where you work. Mm-hmm. And so our goal is to look at the human side of the business and say, how can we make your people the most efficient in the context you have, leveraging software and artificial intelligence? Mm-hmm. And we're going to do that through a community and then through a series of boot camps that I'm guessing will run every month. And try to work in a group setting, if you will, sort of one-on-one and in a group setting with each of those.
Who are those clients? Are they like tech companies, software companies, or what kind of clients do you have in those
groups? We haven't launched a group yet, so that's coming. But they'd be all over the place. So we have a marketing agency, we have a bookkeeping firm, we have ourselves. So, I mean, we're sort of using ourselves as the model to show how this works. So, you know, they're just businesses, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's not really limited to anybody, right? It's more like, where are you at in your journey and yeah, where do you want to go?
I mean, as disruptive as AI is, and some of us seem to be afraid, some of us seem to be excited, part of the truth is also that we are kind of in a bubble. There are so many people out there, even among us developers, who have never used Claude Code or don't know what that is. We are still quite early in that process. So
way early.
My question is now, I understand the bootcamp has not yet started, but like from your talks to those clients from all industries, what are some common misconceptions about like AI, or what are people like really getting wrong?
I'd say on one hand, people give it way too much agency, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Rosie from the Jetsons and it's going to solve all of our problems. It's, it can do everything. And so it, they forget that the human should still be at the center of all of this. And that's the place where you'll see dividends start to pay, and you'll see the divide between the companies who get it and the companies who don't get it. Mm-hmm. Those who use it as a tool to enable their staff versus replace staff. So inevitably, I'll talk to a company and they'll say they'll want to use AI for the roles that they have invested no time on. Oh, I just need to create content. I'll just use AI to create content. It's like, well, yeah, but you need a content strategy. Like, can AI write words? Yes. Is that the right words? Like, should you be doing that? Like, I don't know. Like, you know. Right. Like, you didn't invest in it before. Like, why all of a sudden do you think that this is good now? So, in the end of the day, like, we're talking about software. Mm-hmm. We've been automating things in software since the dawn of software.
Well, that's AI, what software is about, right?
Bingo. Like this isn't anything new. So when you put it in that sort of frame, then what are you using AI for? Well, we're using it to do some interrogation of some things, right? We're using it to generate some things. Right, we're using software to sort of automate some of those processes if you're sort of in that automation place. But there is also a place of like, I just need to interact with this thing better so that I can make decisions faster. Okay, well, then let's talk about the decision-making process. Like, how are you getting data? How are you trusting it? So the whole mindset, which is like where we're coming into this, is like, how do you have a practice that is leveraging software to enhance your business? And that is either tools or artificial intelligence or a chatbot or. And as software becomes cheaper to write, call it vibe code. There's plenty of places where somebody could just vibe code some tools for their company, which are totally fine because it just helps them move faster. These are things that weren't possible before because it was too expensive to create software. Mm. So guess what we have? A fuck ton of developers who need jobs. Well, guess what? If we can sort of redeploy that to make micro tools, like, there's a whole industry that doesn't even exist today.
So SaaS, you know? SaaS 2.0?
Yeah, I mean, I think SaaS is at risk. 4.0. Yeah, look, so many companies have HubSpot, but only use a very small portion of it, but they bought this big fucking package and they don't need all this stuff, or they don't even want to work that way. That was just a tool that they were presented with. Now in a matter of weeks or a month, you could have something that's tailored to your system, to your people, the way you want, with new tools. Like, there's new SaaS.
Absolutely.
Look at all the headless stuff that's out there now. So then you sort of zoom back and you go, what do we need to accomplish that? Oh, we need to be able to integrate with our tools really well, right?
Well, APIs,
APIs are going to be a big deal.
It was quite a similar promise of all these no-code tools back then. Like, it's going to replace internal tooling in a way that you can just define what you want and then you're very easy to. That didn't materialize. Will it materialize with the help of AI?
I wouldn't say that it didn't materialize. I would say that it didn't reach the hype that anybody expected it to. Yeah. But I mean, for that conference, we used a lot of no-code tools for all of our admin stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And I think we're going to see evolutions of that now. And will it be the end all fucking thing that
the one app
claim? Yeah, like, no, of course not. Yeah. Just like developers aren't going away either. But I do think we're in this evolutionary space where you can go, yeah, software will become cheaper to make, and API integration is important. And it's not unreasonable to think that you're going to interact with an AI thing versus going to Google. Like, yeah, like the car, yeah. I think it was a 15-year span from the time the Model T came out to like mainstream adoption of like automobiles at the house. It's only 15 years. Yeah. I don't even think it was that long. So could this be a big deal? Yeah, it's going to be a big deal because you can measure the return on one's investment. I can give you resources, aka compute, to do more cheaper over time. That is a very compelling business case versus hire my company to build a website so that you can put it out there and then pay a marketing team to do more marketing and then pay an SEO group to do more SEO to get to more people to come back to do the thing, to then go back to the software group and say, I need better features to go fix it, to retest it, to go back to the marketing people. Or I can go, yeah, let's make your people more productive.
I mean, it's a very interesting way to look at it. Like software, as we figured out, is just about automating things. Like we as a profession, as developers, we helped like Microsoft introducing Microsoft Office, for example, which replaced a lot of librarians and secretaries and stuff like that. Yep. And now we came all the long way to replace ourselves. Replace ourselves.
I mean, you look at all the things and you go, right now, the playing field's been a bit leveled, right? We all have access to data at sort of the same speed to be able to make decisions that faster than we've ever been able to make. And that means then, how do you differentiate yourself from somebody else, some other company, right? And it's it's very, I think it's very exciting times. And I think the gold rush is here. I mean, I think that there is, we're, anybody who's listening to this is, like you said, you are already so privileged, if you will, because you know what the fuck I'm talking about. And that means that you're the tip of the spear of what's happening. And I can't tell you the number of people I talk to are like, I can do what? I can do like, yeah, wait, what?
The same way we felt back in the day when we introduced someone to Excel macros or something. They can do what?
100%. 100%. I mean, I show people the code that we wrote. You know, for that conference, we used a lot of Google Sheets and we had custom menus, and those custom menus called our APIs, and they did all that kind of stuff. And I show people that engineers, well-seasoned fucking engineers, I show this to, and they go, wait, you could do that in Google Sheets? Like, that's pretty odd. Like, we would have never built the thing. And I'm like, right. Like, you just didn't know. And that's okay. Like the world is changing. And let's be honest, tech's been really fucking boring the last 10 years. Like, oh, another React framework. Yay.
Like, another JavaScript cares? Packager.
Right. So I look at it and go, cool. Like, you know, it sucks that we're not going to do TC anymore. Or maybe that's sort of the way it was always meant to evolve. And now we're just evolving it in a little bit of a different way to do a different thing to whatever. I don't know. But I look at what's here and what we're able to do, and it's pretty exciting, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's cool. We both the arc from like being pessimistic about the whole industry to now it's gold rush time.
I don't. And I know that it is really tough for a lot of people to find work at the moment. And my encouragement to you is that it's just that the work hasn't sorted out where it needs to go. You have a whole bunch of people who don't even know how to get through resumes because it sort of was easier before and now it's not. And so the system is clogged up and it's not working really well. And all of this will pass. I know that doesn't make it easier for somebody who maybe is looking for work at the moment. Hey, I myself am trying to reincarnate who I am and don't have a bunch of money coming in. Like, times are tough here too. But it would be foolish to think that we're not at the dawn of some pretty amazing stuff to come. And those who really embrace the change and learn, are going to be in a great position. And I think we'll have a lot of fun. Those who want to just like, you know, we always did it this way. Like, oh, you're in for some trouble.
And those never because, go so far.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at my son who's in college and you go, well, what does work look like for him when he graduates? And, you know, I think junior skilled people will have maybe a tougher time, but at the same token, they're embracing all of this change with that beginner mindset because they know that it's the future. And so they're coming in naive and don't give a shit about the past. And they're going, how do I get this shit done? Yeah. And so that like imbalance of like, they're going to come eat your lunch if you're not careful. Like, they're going to have 62 agents that did the thing, that do the thing, and they don't give a shit what your stupid AI process was. Yeah.
Yep. Very cool. Those were some very nice closing words with a bit more of optimism in them. Thank you so much, Clark.
Absolutely.
Have a good day.
You too.